Thanks. Robbie Ohmes with Merrill Lynch. Actually, two questions for Eduardo, both related to oil prices. First, I thought the chart you put up about the sort of the $65,000 and over versus $65,000 and above in super center traffic and how there was a difference there. Do you think, you know, with the change, if we have a sustained lower price at the pump, do you think you'll see a change in that where the $65,000 and under could improve, or do you see any impact at all from that? And then the second question related to oil prices coming down is I was curious if you could speak to how the pass-through will work in areas like consumables. You've seen inflation in a lot of areas that Walmart sells product in related to petroleum costs. And can you just walk us through the mechanics of if, again, if is big if oil prices stay at lower levels, how quickly we could see a reversion or a repass-through of price cuts in those areas? Thanks.
The first one, in terms of the customer and how the customer shops, and our expectation is that through all the work that we've done and the work that John and his team in merchandising shared with you today, that clearly shows the discipline in the way that we assort our stores. Through that work, through the work that Bill Simon and the operations team have accomplished in providing customers with a faster, cleaner, and friendlier environment, we are obviously making a big bet that no matter what the economic environment we see in the future, and hopefully for everybody's good sake, we hope that the economy turns around quickly. We believe we will enjoy the same level of success. We've seen traffic increase and those income levels that you just mentioned, but we feel that we can keep the traffic, that we've put in place what is needed for us to continue to enjoy success with that segment of the market. With respect to costs and whether oil prices and any change in oil prices will have an impact on the price cost first and prices of items in the stores. First of all, we don't know what's gonna happen with oil. I don't know, are you long on oil? No? Okay. So, we don't know. See, and we don't, we don't speculate, right? So, very simply, we're factual about where we are. Our cost structure today is what it is, and we're pricing our products based on that. Rest assured, though, that as always, we have a reputation that precedes us, I think, that we are on the side of the customer. And because we're on the side of the customer, we will aggressively look for opportunities to give back to the customer, if indeed costs come down.
Let's go here to the left.
Thank you. Eduardo here, Adrienne Shapiro, Goldman Sachs. Question relating to the remodels. It wasn't that long ago where you had seen disruptions, you weren't seeing the returns to make the remodels make sense. You pulled back from that. Now it sounds as if clearly we're going the other way and ramping up spending on remodels. If you could share with us the kind of lifts that you're seeing. We had heard snippets. I think Linda referred to some improvement in home. But if you could share with us what gives you the confidence to double the spend in remodels. That was my first question. And then the second relates to cannibalization. About a year ago, you pared back the supercenter. We had been hearing that cannibalization was impacting comps by about 100 basis points. Now, as you are anniversarying that, what are you seeing as you claw back perhaps some of the comp improvement as you cannibalize yourself less? Thank you.
On the remodels, and I'll take the question simply because I think I'm responsible for it. The fact is that where we remodeled the entire chain, take as an example the TV wall and the investments we made to improve the customer experience in electronics, the results were dramatic. I mean, we have been winning in that space now for several quarters. And the reason we have been winning in that space is precisely because we have built the credibility with the customer. And we build the credibility by investing in remodeling that part of the store. Now, we did decide at the time that we would slow down remodels, particularly as it related to home and apparel. And the reason is we didn't have a story to tell. We did not feel at the time that we were ready for it. And now we are. You're going to see the store the way it looks. Now we've got several stores, and I don't know exact numbers, but several stores we have been testing components of this, and several where we have tested the entire offering the way that you will see it. And we feel very confident that it's the right thing to do. I think that this is a time where we can take advantage of our strength, take advantage of our market position, make the investment, and come out of it with a winning proposition.
I think we have one in the back left also.
David Strasser from Bank of America. Two questions.
Some numbers. I can't share numbers. It's too small, Adrian. It's, you know, at this point in time, the whole spectrum of changes that we are calling Project Impact, it's present in maybe 30, 40 stores. It would be premature to give you any indication of how that in specific numbers. Everything is positive, though. Otherwise, we wouldn't be making the $1.7 billion commitment that we're making in remodels. I'm sorry, I didn't answer cannibalization. Cannibalization, we're seeing the as you would have expected, as we have slowed down, the impact of cannibalization should be coming down, and it is coming down. And as we build new stores because of a new capital efficiency model that is much more thorough in the way that we're looking at where we build stores based on precisely one of the dimensions is the level of cannibalization, again, we feel confident that that number will continue to drop.
And Eduardo, in addition to that, I think we should remind everybody that that normalization that you talked about in capital spending, where much of the spending took place last year for stores that opened up in the first half of this year, Adrian, a disproportionate number of stores would have opened up in the early part of this year.
So 100 stores.
So the read-through on the cannibalization is going to be offset because we had so many stores that were opened up early on, more so than would have been normal for this time of the year.
That's a good point. The full impact you will see it next year.
Back there to the left, David.
Thanks. David Strasser from Bank of America. As you continue to use Win, Play, Show and analyze the business, what areas of the, are you looking to add square footage to take away? It seems even, you know, as much as there's been a focus on apparel, even some areas, it seems like home may even be taking some of the apparel square footage away. Is that?
I don't think so, but I'll let John take that question.
When you get to the store, store one, that there has been more space invested in some of the high growth categories around consumables and food, because for a long time, you know, we've kind of restricted the growth in that area with only 25% of the floor, but more than that in the sales. So we've done some fine tuning, but then most of the work is really done. And then what you'll also see over in the store is that almost every area lost space, but the space that they lost went back to the customer. And so the Win, Play, and Show space allocation really happens at the business unit level for the most part. And so that instead of everybody getting the equal allocation, I mean, the best example is in electronics, where all the digital products are getting space expansions and some of the, you know, the physical packaged media, CDs, movies are coming down dramatically so that we can space the growth categories. So I'd say the majority of it happens at the business unit level, but as we go forward, and especially as we start building smaller stores, you know, instead of building 150,000, 160,000 foot stores instead of 200,000 foot stores, you know, there will be some fine tuning with the space allocation by business unit.
And maybe I would add only that the tools to make that a science rather than an art actually are the tools that John referred to before that we have invested in and that you've been reading about as part of that merchandising transformation. And the amount of investment we have put in precisely to develop tools, one of those tools, the big chunk of those tools actually have been developed to optimize space, both at the macro level, so if you look at the total store, and helping merchants make decisions on, in terms of category and department spacing, and the rest is at the modular level, much more precise and at the micro level. Those tools are in development. We haven't finished them yet. So the full advantage of playing out in space will take place once we have them.
Hi. Thanks. Greg Malek with Morgan Stanley. Hi, Eduardo.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
So two questions. One, a follow-up on the remodels. So is this really about the home pad, or is this a much bigger project about remodeling the whole store? Can you give us a little more numbers, you know, how many stores will ultimately be touched?
You saw the number there, and why don't I let you make that that assessment? Once you have walked to the store one, ask me the same question after you have walked through the store. See what you think, whether it's a department or whether it's an all-inclusive view at how the customer shops.
But in the budget that you showed, that would be to do it across the entire store base.
Yeah.
The plan is not just 500 stores.
No. The plan is to go, when Bill showed, year three, 70% of our store base would be like the ones that you, like the ones, all stores will look like store one. Ah, I'm sorry, I'm getting now jet lagged.
One other question was on store labor productivity.
Yeah.
You showed nicely how it had jumped, I guess, 5 to 6% in the back end and the front end. But I believe that was per items and per volume. But the store productivity was on a dollar basis. So is that fair to say that the whole store productivity is obviously not grown as much? And if that's the case, how much can you improve the middle of the box labor productivity? Is that something that could also have a 5 to 6% increase?
Bill, can you take that?
We certainly believe that the best is yet to come. We expect to see continued improvement in productivity in the front end. We're in the second year of that and believe there's still more in years three and beyond. We're still in the first year of the back end, so we believe there's, you know, 2, 3, 4 years of improvement there. And the middle, the vast majority of the space where the labor exists hasn't been relayed yet. We've done the work. We just have not begun implementation and won't until the spring. So we believe there's a substantial amount there as well. The numbers are difficult to gauge, but it would at least be at the rate that we believe it should be at the rate that we're at or above the rate that we're running today.
And one thing that I would add maybe is the fact that one thing we didn't mention but that we're pursuing is the use of electronic product code as a way to drive productivity in that center of the store. If you think about apparel, it's a great example. We've got a ongoing initiative right now that would be probably the first part of the store that we see that we'll see electronic product code coming to the store. And if you think about the time that today an associate will take to go item by item with the Telson going around to check inventory and all that, and if you think about an environment where you'll have everything in apparel with an electronic product code, where it will just scan once the entire rack and will tell exactly how much inventory you have. The estimates we have in terms of productivity savings are really important.
Let's go here to the right.
The middle of the store productivity is so dependent on the merchandise assortment. So as the merchants assort win, play, show, this is all interconnected. And the reason that we're doing it sort of third, the middle of the store, the sales floor, is it is dependent on the assortment. And as we relay the store with win, play, show, they obviously will facilitate labor savings in the middle of the store. And that was the point I was trying to make about how this is all interconnected.
Thank you. Neil Curry from UBS. I wondered how much SKU rationalization was also a part of that labor productivity in the store. Dottie earlier talked about rationalization within the apparel segment. Is there more to come in other areas, particularly grocery? And are there any numbers you can put around these?
Either John or Jack, whoever. Want to take it?
Get a mic.
Sorry.
You're good now.
Can you hear
well,
me?
Yeah. He speaks a different kind of English, so you, please.
Even to you, just, Neil.
Mine is much
I can
better
understand you, Jack.
Yes. Let's put it that way. Sorry about that. I had to say.
Exactly. I'll slow down a bit, Eduardo. As we've gone through the win, play, show exercise, we clearly are identifying those categories where you need a broad and deep range. And those categories that are in show, you will start to see a greater SKU rationalization. So we haven't got numbers to that. But as we're working through it category by category, we are seeing some areas where we can see some significant SKU reduction going forward.
And while I have you, Jack, coming from Europe, how do you see out-of-case packaging, shelf-ready packaging, playing a part in improving store productivity?
I think that links back to the SKU point. As the SKU, in categories where you can take SKU reduction, I think there are significant opportunities to drive more efficiency through more UPC packaging going forward, working with our vendors.
The other thing that also you will see us do, and you will see the first phase of that today, is the way that the store is being designed. And again, in existing stores, it's more difficult to do, but you still will be able to see it. Those high-velocity items that actually can benefit productivity significantly are being placed in the back wall in a way that we eventually will have gravity-fed systems to feed those high-velocity items from the back. For example, diapers is an obvious one, but you'll see several of the high-velocity items. Pet food is another one that will be serviced from the back room in a much more efficient way than what we have today. Efficiency is a major component of the design of the stores that we're looking at right now. As you can imagine, we would not share with everybody here in the webcast exactly what we're doing, right? But that is a pretty significant part of what we're trying to achieve.
Out here in the back.
The question is on inflation. Over the last year or so, there's been a lot of inflationary pressures that have been passed through from vendors. Can you just give us an idea where you are today in terms of, you know, the inflationary trends / now deflationary trends and the mindset around lowering prices or protecting margin, et cetera?
I'll start with the mindset of lowering prices, because that is the mindset that we always have, right? So that has not changed while prices were going up. I don't know what the costs will do in the next 6 months or so. Right now, much like everybody else, if you look at food is running at mid-single-digit year-over-year increases, and that, I believe, is a reflection of the marketplace. That's why everybody's reading. Hard lines, on the other hand, you have mostly very low single-digit increases. In the case of electronics, for example, you actually have deflation already of mid-single digits deflation in that space. Apparel, I believe, Dottie, is like a couple of percentage points up. So it's not a factor. It has not been a factor. And as a matter of fact, Blitz will probably bring some surprises in terms of great prices. Obviously, that will help bring inflation in America down. Can you take that one, Leslie? See, I did yours. No, it's helpful. Okay.
This is Bernie Sosnick, Guilford Securities. Logistics had formerly been under a corporate umbrella and has been brought into the U.S. Division. You cited significant improvements in mileage, other benefits. Could you outline how important this could be to productivity improvements, especially since logistics has been one of the core competencies of the company?
Bill, can you please take that? I think we've got some exciting plans there.
Yes. It obviously, as you can see from the results, you know, very important to all of our productivity initiatives. And although it's, you know, not residing in the corporate function anymore, it's in the U.S. segment, still doing the same work that it did before. So those benefits are passing through to Sam's Club in the U.S. as well. We believe that that productivity will continue. I couldn't have described it any better than a core competency and a core function, and those guys continue to be world class, and I would expect that to continue. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't.
There will be an opportunity, however, I would think, with Bill now overseeing the whole thing, right, that now you can actually think of the supply chain in a holistic way so that you optimize the total supply chain by combining logistics and store operations. And that's exactly what we're doing, because Bill's got some very innovative thinking in terms of how to just accomplish that. So how to bring the efficiencies that we have enjoyed in the logistics side of the business to the back room of the stores. And as you think about that and the possibilities that we have, then I start believing in his numbers in terms of productivity.
I think that's the point, that I think you see the productivity improvements in the back room. We have more warehouse square footage in the back room of our stores than we do in our DCs. And if you take those principles that have been so effective and world-class in our logistics and warehousing operation and apply them to the way we handle merchandise when it reaches the store dock, you can see where we can get that kind of improvement.
Eduardo, last year you grew inventory at less than about the half the rate of sales. This year it's well below the rate of sales, half the rate of sales. How should we think about going forward the ability to keep growing inventory at half the rate of sales? Does that start to come back up at some point? That's the first question. The second question is, if I go back a couple of years ago, probably one of the biggest challenges in the organization was the consistency of the store experience across the chain. Northeast store is particularly tough. You've seen that come up quite a bit. Any metrics you can share with us to give us an idea of how you close the gap between, let's say, the bottom 25% and the top 25%? And then the final question was with regard to remodels.
I told you I'm jet lagged. Sorry, I can't retain three questions. Let's start with the first one on inventory. What you saw today, you know, and we call it Project Impact, and it's got a 10-word framework. It is a way of thinking about the business that it's different. And if you think about how that should play out, and you hear what John said about win, play, show, and what Bill indicated about the fact that how we assort the stores will have a major impact on efficiencies and productivity, the same can be said about inventories. A major benefit of the discipline that John and his team are bringing to the stores is precisely on carrying less inventory, having the inventories that matter for the customer, and making the hard choices that should result, at least in the short term, in a continuation of our ability to continue to take a little bit of inventory down. Now, whether it's going to be half the rate of sales, I'm not prepared to say that today. I don't have the numbers, so I wouldn't share that. But you can expect that we will continue to drive inventories down based precisely on a framework. So this is different than the way that we took inventories down the first time. See, the first time was we're eliminating the risers. So the risers come down, inventory comes down. But that's a one-time benefit. This one actually has a long-term way of playing out. Because as you edit assortments in each one of the different departments, then you start seeing the benefit. Your second question was? Consistency. Bill, do you want to talk about that?
We launched a program to address that about the spring of last year that is a methodical and repetitive store review process where we go in and against a list of just 10 very simple metrics, we go in and we just keep reviewing and updating and correcting and reviewing again against those 10 metrics. And the very biggest improvement that we've had, the reason that those scores on clean, fast, and friendly have gone up is that the bottom 20% has had a substantial improvement. The top 20% was already good. They're up as well, but only incrementally. The bottom is transformationally up, and I think that's why the fleet broadly has improved.
Two questions, and I'll keep them short and sweet. So the first one, with regards to the smart network, can you talk about how you're working with your vendors there? And then secondly, with the market side format, that chart that you gave us, would that fall into the grocery line in terms of the new stores there?
Oh, I'll answer the market side, and then you can do that. It's not there. It's a new project. We don't budget. Okay. We don't know.
To be continued.
We could.
And then, Stephen, on the smart network.
Yeah, the smart network, we launched it just over a month ago. We had literally hundreds of our vendors at the launch, and we've been following up directly with each one of them one-on-one following the launch. But more importantly, this network was designed with our top vendors involved from the very beginning. We did a lot of testing, and we had a test of 40 stores, and we allowed them to be a part of that test. Obviously, we need them to be a part of it so that they could start to convince themselves against the metrics that they're important to them to make sure that their ROI is positive on that network. In addition to sort of the partnership that I think Walmart is famous for with its vendors, we are providing a lot of data to them so that they can do those ROI calculations on an ongoing basis. And my hope is that over time, we'll get really good at almost a real-time understanding of what's happening, not only with the network, but more importantly, with what's happening in the store on a movement basis so that you can actually make adjustments within a week, you know, inside of a week, in fact. Based on what's going on at store level. So our vendors are intimately involved, not only in the design of the network, but also as we roll it out.
Let me add to that, Deb, that Stephen description, which is how the suppliers will use the network to sell more of their products, is only the tip of the iceberg. Because if you think about what we're doing, we're looking at this as a way to create an interactive environment that will see customers shop at Walmart seamlessly across different channels. And nowhere will that come together better than in stores at the network.
Okay, one more. Charles, up here. No, here, right here.
Thanks, Charles Grom, J.P. Morgan. Two quick questions to follow up on Greg's on the remodels. Is there a time frame and how long it's going to take to remodel the store? It sounds like they're more full remodels versus the special projects of a couple years ago. And then second question, similar to Costco, you guys have been able to buy ahead and take advantage of price increases. Similar, as prices start to fall down or come down, what's your expectation? Are you guys going to be able to scale back your buying power?
Buy ahead, I didn't get that. We're very cautious with our inventory, so we don't buy a lot of things ahead.
Okay. Oh, so you have not been buying ahead.
Well, we haven't bought a lot of things. We haven't changed our practices in terms of how we manage our inventory because of an opportunistic or situation. We have not. We have managed our company. We have managed inventories the same way that we always do because, I don't know, based on the results in the marketplace, trying to make bets seems like it's not a good idea. So at least that's what I've read. So we don't do that.
Okay, fair enough. And then on the remodels?
Remodels, I think that the difference is that what you will see today, it's a fully integrated approach to customer experience. So it's not one part of the store. It is more a full remodel. Now, having said that, not every store will get that full remodel. It depends on the age. It depends on the when did it get the right last remodel. We're going to be very prudent in the way that we invest capital in those stores. So out of the total program that has us remodeling something like 500 stores next year, some of them will get a much bigger and thorough remodel than others, depending on when they started operating. A lot of the remodels also, and that's something that maybe we didn't cover, and it's important, I believe, for you to know, is we're using also, as part of that number, what we call inbox conversions. and in-box conversions is coming into a discount store that might be 120,000 to 140,000 square feet and actually converting it into a supercenter within the same box, something that we haven't done in the past, but we are doing several right now and testing it.
Okay. Thank you, Eduardo. Just an item of note for those that are on the webcast, we will be coming back tonight at around 7:45 Central Daylight Time. We had said 8 o'clock earlier. It'll be closer to 7:45. This will conclude this afternoon's webcast. Thank you for joining us.